So I was a virgin when I got the job, a virgin filmmaker. I was the production manager on a film crew. We were filming in 15 countries around the world, making a feature documentary about climate justice. But by far the most challenging shoot that we did was in the DRC, or the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is sometimes also known as the broken heart of Africa. It's also said that where logic ends, the Congo begins. One day we were filming in a pygmy village, and we were walking past some huts, and an old man beckoned me into his hut, and I thought that he was asking us if we might like to go and film in there. But when I stooped into this low hut, I saw in the corner, sitting on a wooden platform, an old man with big eyes looking at me in the dim light, and his whole upper chest was an open, blistering, wet infection, which was obviously very chronic. And they were asking me for help. I really didn't have anything to offer other than a little bottle of antibiotic powder and my first aid kit, which was really pretty crucial for me to help to keep my own film crew alive while I was there. And they asked us maybe for some money. We'd just given the head of the village quite a lot of money to get permission to film there. And they wanted transport to get him to a hospital. He was clearly dying. If he'd got to a hospital, which was 2 hours away, well, for a start, there was no vehicles and they didn't even have a bicycle. And had he got to the hospital, there wouldn't have been any running water and probably no medication, and he would have been sharing a bed. So it's a classic African moment of us all sort of really feeling that desperation as we stood there in this hut. I shook his hand and the hand of everybody in the hut, and we drove off in our vehicle and left the crowd and the dust behind us. The next day we visited a botanical garden, and at the end of the tour we were shown a concrete pool, pretty dingy, about the size of this stage, and in the pool there was a crocodile who was caught as a juvenile in 1953. He was huge, probably about 4 metres long, and the garden staff thought that we might like to film the crocodile being fed, or maybe at least enjoy the spectacle of it. So unbeknownst to us, they'd sent a man off on a bicycle to procure a chicken. He came back and duly had the chicken attached to his handlebars upside down by its feet, still alive, of course. Jeff, my co-producer and director, who is an ardent animal rights activist, in fact, he was the international sea turtle campaigner for Greenpeace for 12 years, adamantly said that there was no way that we were going to take any part in this spectacle, and promptly went and sat in the vehicle, folded his arms and sulked. Me, as production manager, was left to deal with the situation, with the botanical garden staff asking us to pay the man for the chicken. Jeff said there was no way that we were handing over any money for the chicken. Clearly, the man who had biked some considerable distance to buy the chicken was hungry, and the crocodile was also hungry. And so eventually I had to make the executive decision to pay the chicken man for the chicken, and the chicken was duly tossed into the crocodile's dingy pool. And whilst Jeff and I and the film crew sat in the vehicle, and the botanical garden staff enjoyed the spectacle on our behalf. The next day we were really ready to get out of the Congo. It was time to go, and we had to fly from the local airport to Kinshasa, the capital, to catch a connecting flight to Paris. So we rocked up to the airport, tiny little airport, hardly you couldn't even call it an airport, about 9 o'clock in the morning to get our flight, which was on Hawara Airlines. And Hawara Airlines is what they call a maybe airline, which is that maybe there'll be a plane and maybe there won't, and maybe you'll get there and maybe you won't. And these planes are sometimes also known as flying coffins in Africa. Anyway, sure enough, there wasn't a plane. It had been cancelled due to technical reasons. So we ended up sitting in this airport all day drinking red fizzy drink. It was very hot, and there was a woman sitting next to me on her way to Kinshasa as well, and they have these delicacies there which are like huge maggots about the size of mice, some sort of larvae, and they buy them from the forest children and they have them in plastic bags to take back to Kinshasa. But she'd had a bag of these writhing larvae in her handbag, and they had escaped whilst she was unaware of it. And so I was sitting next to her and watching her with some amusement as she was trying to rescue and pick all these things out of her handbag. We sat there all day. It was about 40 degrees. We were very tired. We were very hungry, as was everybody else, waiting to see that hopefully there was going to be a plane arrive. And eventually a plane did arrive about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So we all walked out onto the steaming tarmac, just desperate to get onto this plane. It was very bizarre. At the front of the plane, there was this guard of honour of people draped in kind of finery and gold, and they were sort of doing this guard of honour as somebody was very important, was getting onto the plane at the front. And we were getting on the back entrance, and as we were getting on, these airport staff were all running around the tarmac in red overalls and sort of chasing each other like they were playing tag and kind of rolling over like they were doing stunts for a TV show. And meanwhile, they were trying to load all this fish into the hold of the plane, and one of the buckets of fish had spilt. So all these flapping, slippery fish on the tarmac that people were trying to pick up and get back in the bucket. And then we finally got onto the plane and sat down, and then as the other people were getting on, we heard this very sort of aggressive altercation taking place, and there was a military policeman trying to push a man onto the plane, and the man clearly didn't want to get onto the plane. Stewards were trying to get the man off the plane, and the military police were pushing and pushing, and the man was yelling. And we were tired and hot, and it had been a very long day, and it was kind of all a bit heavy and scary. Anyway, we eventually got to Kinshasa, and people applauded as the plane landed. And we got our connecting flight to Paris with minutes to spare. And I just thought, you know, the Congo was... I couldn't even speak about my experiences there for about 3 months after coming out of it. It was so disturbing on such a deep soul level. I think it was a little bit like climate change. It's confounding, it's challenging, and on some level it's very sad. But when you actually go into those experiences and face them and look at them, you can find real courage and strength from those sorts of experiences in life. So, yeah.